This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris.
On Channel Q.
All right, Tuesday night. I'm not mad at it. Tomorrow's hump day. Oh, it's only Tuesday. I literally came in today thinking it might be Wednesday. I think I had my fingers crossed. Not so much, but that's okay. Tonight we got a great show for you. We got Margaret Cho. Let me tell y'all. I was a fan all the way back, rolling all the way back to All American Girl. I literally have the DVD box set. So if someone's a fan, I'm definitely a fan. So we got a lot to talk about, including some of, like, I have some questions just about the current political state of comedy itself. So we're going to be unpacking all that with Margaret Cho. But question of the night, it's up on our Loveline IG page. What do you think is the main contributor of declining marriage rates? Now, again, drop some gems on me. It's on our Loveline IG page. It's either going to be some supportive, positive things, or you're all going to be going right for the jugular about all the things that are wrong in the current culture with dating apps. You know, those definitely aren't helping. Although, y'all know Dr. Chris is a supporter of them. You know, all my patients that are single are learning how to manage and navigate them. It's just part of the current landscape of sex and romance in the 21st century. But it also brings forth some issues as well. So we'll be breaking that on down and also talking later in the show about important conversations to have with your fiance. If you're planning on getting married to someone, pledging, as they say, your entire life to this human being, there's some questions and topics you need to break down ahead of time. So we'll be talking about that and also talking about something called toxic positivity. Oh yeah, this whole culture idea that you should always be thinking positive. Well, there's a lot of things that are problematic about that in terms of mental health. But let's talk about some good news real quick. A boy was bullied. This isn't the good news. We land on the good news. But a boy was bullied for a homemade Tennessee shirt. This boy makes a homemade shirt. He didn't have an actual logo shirt for the University of Tennessee, for which he's a big fan sports-wise. So what he did, I think this is adorable, he got an orange shirt and showed up at school, and he had on a piece of paper attached a little homemade design. It was adorable, to the front of the shirt. Well, God bless adolescents, because you know he got verbally assaulted when in the school lunchroom, where all the bad, dark things happen, apparently. But in a twist of fate, the University of Tennessee, after this went viral, they decided that they would take the boy's design and make it an official school shirt and dedicate a portion of the proceeds to Stomp Out Bullying, a national nonprofit that's dedicated to eradicating bullying. I love that. It's adorable. You got to see the shirt. It's one of the cutest things. God bless this kid's, you know, creativity. But of course, we, you know, again, humans, we're the only group that loves to make fun of anything that's creative or diverse. We love conformity and uniformity. Not the plant kingdom, not the animal kingdom. They're all about the health of diversity. Not us. We're going to slap a picture of it on our IG story, though, so you can check it out. Marriage rates are going down. Bum-ba-da-bum. A new study says, I actually think there's something kind of gross about this, but the Journal of Family and Marriage says it's because men are broke. Now, so even a little bit of some sexism and classism into this bad boy. Women are looking for suitable male partners, but it turns out they can't find enough rich men to go around. Now, why y'all got to date someone rich, right? Like, but the journal just goes right along and says, well, the lowering marriage rate is due to a lack of what they call economically attractive partners. Again, kind of classist and offensive. I thought marriage was about love. I thought marriage was about love, commitment, companionship, having someone to witness the world with you, having a, you know, filthy sex partner always at your disposal. God bless. And they're making it about economics. Now, again, what we're doing is we're rolling backwards, because 120 years ago, we were like coming up with these concepts like marriage and monogamy and commitment. It was rooted in capitalism. It was literally about land ownership and property and finances and networking with wealthy, powerful families. It's 21st century. I thought we're well beyond that. So here's my heads up. I think part of the decline is that women aren't feeling disempowered without having a man in their lives. I love that. More sexual expression and fluidity. And so people aren't necessarily playing into heterocentricity or even necessarily doing opposite sex coupling. The queer world, thankfully, has brought us a more diversified, you know, set of ways to function in the world. And also, I just think people aren't necessarily looking to do marriage the way that they used to do. The old models aren't working for people. I mean, I've written two books about this stuff. That the way we currently run our relationships is quite toxic. We call it toxic monogamy. Not that monogamy is necessarily bad, but the way we've been running it is quite problematic. And again, if you're marrying and dating for economics, check that, because that's not what it's about. That's a severe misuse of, geez, relationality, but also just companionship and care. So, also in the news, Todd Palin, Sarah Palin's husband, files for divorce. That's all I got. Nothing more needed to be said. God bless you, sir. You hung in there. we don't need to unpack why. We all know why, you know, move forward, find better. And finally, just when you thought you've heard it all in terms of technology, we now have, yes, robot priests. They'll bless you. They'll advise you. And even for free, they'll perform your funeral. See, I wasn't aware that you had to pay a priest to do a funeral.
I didn't either.
Yes. Apparently in some faiths you do. The machine, the robot priest, it's only $1 million to make. Then here's the guy who created it says, the robot will never die. It'll just keep updating itself and evolving. With AI, we hope it will grow in wisdom to help people overcome even the most difficult troubles. I don't know. This is a problem when we're kind of pushing a lot of human skill sets and things that are highly relational onto robotics. Even in my field of psychology, I problematize a lot of the advancements that we're moving towards. Some people in their office have these machines and they're really trying to push for it, where you kind of type in your symptoms and you can track changes. I mean, there's something good about that, but there's something horrible about that. Like at my funeral, I want people to see a human being up there that they can connect with and talk to. If I need someone to bless me or advise me, I don't want it to be a robot. Like, would you feel really blessed by that? I'm not a highly religious person, but they're saying here in this study that robots also pose some risks for religion. They might make it feel too mechanized or homogenized by challenging core tenets of theology. I'm not mad at that. But they weigh in on the fact that it's far cheaper. Again, I didn't know that was something that people struggled with, is the expense of a funeral. No, I'm sorry, not a funeral, but a priest at the funeral. But that's where we're going these times. Everyone's trying to kind of save everything. All right, so we got our question of the night up on our Loveline IG page. Tonight's question is going to be the main contributor of declining marriage rates. And we're going to talk about that more later in the show, like I said, when we talk about conversations with your fiancé. Because that's one of the things I see in my clinical practice when couples come in, is there's a lot of topics that people don't unpack on the front end, and they just kind of assume, oh, if I'm attracted to you enough and I love you enough, we're committed enough, these things will work themselves out, but they don't. And these are some things that if you work through on the front end, not only might you save yourself some of these things that can ruin marriages, but you might also realize you don't want to get married because you're not as compatible as you thought. Because remember, early relationship, it's a lot of just chemistry-based connectivity, which is good, but it's lust, it's testosterone. Thank God we have those things. But when you move into the more attachment-based phase, when all those things kind of cool down, that's when you really assess compatibility. And compatibility cannot just be what happens when our two personalities come together, which is very important and often only really shown to us in times of conflict, which is why I love when couples have their first sets of conflict, because you really learn, what are we made of as a couple? How strong are we? And also, how is my partner in times of conflict? That's when it really matters, right? The kind of skill set that they have. But there's some topics that are important to break down. So we'll be talking about that. These topics trigger people. It's real. It's real, man. Intimacy, scary. Questions, give us a call. 833-LOVE-001, 833-LOVE-001. We're taking your questions all night. Coming up next, Margaret Cho. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. We got our question of the night up on our Loveline IG page. Tonight's question is, what do you think is the main contributor of the declining marriage rate? I want to hear the good, the bad, the ugly, and also later in the show, be breaking down the important conversations to have with your fiance to possibly divorce-proof your relationship. But right now, more importantly, we are with Margaret Cho.
Hi.
So I'm sure you hear stuff like this all the time, but I was a fan way back to the American Girl days.
I love it.
Yes.
That's great.
I used to sit there and watch every episode, and I was just blown away by you.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, I have all of the DVDs still.
Oh.
Remember those things?
That's so great.
Oh, yeah.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, you were, I think, my first experience of like good comedy.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it was always political and smart.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was rare when you first got into comedy, or maybe it wasn't, right? Was it more?
No, I think it was probably rare for television, but it was something that was happening in nightclubs a lot. So,
okay. You
know, the origin of comedy has always been pretty political. So I think, but in television, it's a little different.
And you're also a groundbreaker because you were one of the first women of color to have their own primetime show and a lead role.
First Asian American, yes.
I mean, stay with that for a second.
I love it.
Yeah. And that's all just from my own memory, having tracked your career.
So yeah.
I will not fanboy out.
That's awesome,
I've seen
though.
Stand
Thank
up
you.
Every single time.
I love it. Thank you.
Yes. And also, I don't know if you remember this, but you were a guest on my podcast with Amber Rose.
Yes. We had a really good time
yeah.
at her house.
That's right.
She's great.
That's back in the day.
Yes. Back in the day. Well, not that. Well, a couple days ago. A couple months ago. A couple years ago, actually.
A couple years ago.
Now. Wow.
Couple hours, couple days,
it
couple
went by
years.
Fast.
It really does. We've grown up a lot since then.
Yes.
You and I, we're different people.
We are. We're totally changed.
And you're now a mom. You got Lucia.
I am my dog mom. I'm a rescue dog mom. Lucia Katsarina. She's in a bag in my lap. So it's great.
But, you know, with her head out of the bag.
With her head out. Well, yeah.
That could be taken the wrong way. She's in a bag on my lap.
No, no. She's, yeah, she likes to have her head out, like, because she's, she doesn't, she's like, she's hanging out the passenger side of her best friend's ride, trying to holla at me.
Wow.
She's really... No scrubs.
That's right. Well done. Well done, Lucia.
She's the best.
So, Fresh Off the Boat. Tell us a little bit about it.
It's Fresh Off the Bloat. It's my new tour.
Oh,
it's because I retain a lot of water.
I know.
And
I
I'm Asian. So, it's Fresh Off the Bloat.
Got it.
So, it's just shows. Just comedy. Doing stand-up comedy everywhere. Talking about things.
Yeah. So, is it going to be focused on political events?
Or? Yes. Yeah. We could call it politics. If the disasters that are happening, it's not exactly politics, but it is.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of other stuff, too. There's so many things to talk about. So many. The tea is hot. The tea has been
scorching.
Brewing. I use two bags. It's brewing. Do you got to put those bags on your eyes? Because she's tired.
You work a lot. How do you do it all? Because you have a tour. You're also now doing your podcast, The Market
Show.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. No, I love it. Because, I mean, I don't do anything else. Like, I don't, like, party or I don't go out. So everything is all, like, work, which is kind of great. I love that.
Yeah, I got burned out that as well. You know, so I'm currently single. Just let the world know that.
Yes.
Hit me up on my DMs.
Me too. Slide into my DMs.
All right.
I
me
know.
Margaret want love.
Yeah, we do. I think that my goal, though, is now I want to really try to not have a partner again for the rest of my life. So I would like to have a succession of lovers. That's my idea. But they always move in. That's the thing I don't want.
How does that happen, though?
You know, they just, you know, I'm like the marrying type. They all want to get married, but then it's not going to, that's not what I want. So I would like to just make that clear with anybody that I hook up with, that I would just like to date.
Right.
Casually.
Right.
Forever.
Can these people overlap and intersect, or is it one by
so.
One? Serial?
Yeah.
So it's not serial style.
I don't think it would be serial, like, because I've had serial, and now I want more of you know, fun adventures here and there.
Casual polyamory.
Casual polyamory that can be emotionally close and intimate, but I don't live with you.
Oh, do you know how much heartache you save yourself and conflict avoidance by not having to wake up every morning and fight about things like the coffee?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's just like I've had so many relationships and I've always wanted them to work out and they never have. And I'm 50 years old and I'm like, you know, maybe I just don't want to live with anybody else. And I'm really going to try to hold myself to that.
So you're being serious?
I'm being serious.
Okay. So are you a fan of Goop? Good old Gwyneth Paltrow?
Yes, yes.
Okay. So she had a story come out where her and her fiancé, husband, didn't live together.
Yeah.
And they weren't planning on living together.
Yeah, that's great.
And there's a new term that they're using called living apart together.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that because I think that there is something to that. I mean, especially if you have the means, like if you have the ability to just live on your own. And, you know, sometimes people live together because it's financially, it's savvy.
That's right.
You know, but maybe if you don't, like Gwyneth Paltrow does, obviously she doesn't have to.
She's doing all right.
You know, yeah. And like, it's fun to have a sleepover. But ultimately, I don't really like sleeping with other people. Like, I don't like to sleep. I like sex, but I don't like to sleep.
So they can't wait. So they can't live with you. They can't sleep over.
They can sleep over, but maybe not make it a regular thing. Not make it every day.
Yeah, I'll tell you. And it's a common occurrence that comes into my office clinically where people have that early relational sleepover anxiety. Like their body won't settle down enough or feel safe to just drift off right away.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm one of those people.
Yeah.
I won't sleep probably for the first like 12 sleepovers.
Right. It's hard to.
It is.
Unless, I mean, it's like if you have very vigorous sex, then maybe that will help the sleep along. But even so, you know, it's hard to, it's when you're not really bonding with somebody or you haven't bonded that completely, you don't know them that well, it's a little bit hard to fall asleep, I think.
Yeah. And Margaret, my old dating style was after the first date, you move in.
Yeah, me
too. I was literally importing them from other states. They'd be in town on vacation and they would just not leave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely did a lot of that. And really, I mean, it sounds romantic, but it, you know, it's really not. It's kind of codependent.
And with that, we're going to take a little breaky break. But coming up next, we're going to keep talking. And also, I want to talk to Margaret about PC culture and politics and comedy. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on channel Q.
All right, we're back. We got our question of the night up on our Loveline IG page. But more importantly, tonight we are with Margaret Cho.
Yes.
So I dated a couple years ago a comedian, and we would have these really powerful, intense conversations around the role of comedy, the role of politics in comedy, but also like PC culture in comedy. Where do you sit in that? Because I know Dave Chappelle right now is getting the conversation going.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think like comedians have to, there's a lot of, you know, it's a minefield. There's a lot of things that you're not supposed to be able to say, but then we get it all turned around when we see somebody like Dave Chappelle who, you know, takes on that challenge, which I think is what comedy is about. And it's sort of like, you know, whether you agree or not, it's almost like you can't censor the comic. And so many comics now are being censored, which for me, I think it's like, it's a hard thing because being all of the identities that I am, I'm a woman, I'm a woman of color, I'm a queer, I'm politically progressive, I'm a lot of these things that these words like political correctness actually serves well. You know, it helps me out because language can really keep us back in a lot of ways. So it's definitely interesting. It's a different time. I didn't realize, you know, how much we would have to be like paying attention to it. But I think social media has given us a place for outrage and a place to display that. So it's so different now.
So you're supportive of the outrage and kind of progressing us away from some of the problematic comments and jokes?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. I'm really supportive of people speaking their truth and saying, I don't like when you say that. I don't like when this is said. These words make me feel like this. And I think that's really important. But it's also important to know that comedians are going to take that as a challenge and are always going to want to take it on.
Okay.
And, it's like you can't... you can't stop it. And some comedians, I think, just are if you're really good at it, then it's almost like you have a license to do it.
Okay.
Some people who are not good at it probably shouldn't do it, but it's hard.
It's interesting because I'd go to some of the more local comedy clubs, some of the smaller ones, names that you probably know, but they're not the larger, bigger name ones. And it was interesting because some of the jokes, I was like, oh man, we're still telling some of those like really old racist jokes.
Yeah.
Like the Asian nail salon stuff. Mm-hmm. You're like, really?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we haven't moved beyond that. We're still thinking that that's funny.
Yeah.
So one of the articles was talking about, I don't want to make about Dave Chappelle. I want to hear your thoughts on this topic, but it comes out of that. This whole idea that some people like Dave and you're in that squad that are very successful, have made a lot of money, that it's hard sometimes to maybe stay rooted in what's happening in the old world that they came from.
Yeah.
And there's like a disconnect.
Yeah.
How do you navigate that?
It's hard. And it's about change. And it's about being ready to change and also changing with the times. But also, it's kind of like, how do we just remain funny throughout it? That's also the big challenge. It's like trying to stay funny and relevant and truthful to yourself. So, you know, for me, it's like, I think it's about listening, really hanging out with a lot of young people. Young people really know where it's at, and especially like people who are coming out as non-binary, people who are like, you know, identifying in newer and different ways as queer. I learned a lot from them. Those are the people that I turn to when I just don't understand anymore.
And it's so stunning you say that, because that's when I talk at universities, I tell everyone that too. I say the peer-reviewed journals from the ivory tower is 10 years behind, but these kids' Tumblrs and social media and Twitter, that's where we can forecast.
Yeah.
That's where we know what's needed, where we're going.
Yeah.
So it inspires me too.
It's so inspiring because it's like they have a sense of self, and that comes from old gays marching for their rights and protesting and standing up for themselves. And then, you know, so that the young gays can really like be gay.
Like, really gay.
Like, well, you ain't seen nothing yet, girl. We're going to be so gay.
It's like a challenge for them, yeah. too. You want to see gay?
Okay, honey. You asked for it now. And so it's like they're bringing it. They are bringing it to the ball. And so that's why it's like so, it's so meaningful. And so that's, I really go to young people to get my advice.
Okay. And what responsibility, if at all, or not what responsibility, but in what ways do you feel like you need to bring your queerness into your work and your art?
I have a lot of responsibility to bring my queerness because otherwise it dissipates. It dissipates in so many ways because comedy is traditionally such a cis, straight, white, male, privileged art form.
Yeah.
And so I have to bring my queerness. I have to bring my femininity, my feminism, my race, all of these things because it's like I don't want the, you know, I don't want that to be lost in any of this, you know? And so that you gotta stay gay.
Stay gay. But again, you're paralleling everything that I challenge in the field of psychology. It's white, cis, hetero, wealthy people's theory stuff, right? Diagnoses.
Yeah.
And I'm always trying to queer it by kind of flipping it, normalizing these diverse creative ways of being.
Really important to. Yeah, you have to.
When we come back, I want to talk about a quote that I pulled off of your page with Diablo Cody.
Okay.
It was like a really powerful statement. So coming up next, we're going to be talking more with Margaret Cho. And if you go on our IG Live, we're going to be playing a little game called 60 Seconds With. See you back in a few minutes.
Love Line. This is Love Line with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
So, you know, getting to talk about things in my life in comedy, especially sex, is really liberating because then you feel very free about it. You know, it's fun.
That was something that was really profound for me, though, because in having tracked your career and also I had done a podcast, you were a guest on it.
Mm-hmm.
I was just really sitting there nodding my head like, wow, you go there.
Yeah. And it's like there all of the things that I've kind of put on myself as a sexual person and kind of like trying to get discovery around it. It's like really like these weird things. I mean, there's a kind of thing of like we put a quality on our freedom and some things I just can't do or I can't get into. And I don't blame myself for it anymore. So it's good.
And what would you say was most beneficial to you in doing that sexual explorative journey that got you to where you are?
Well, I just learned that I can't get all five fingers in for a fist.
Oh, there you go.
The thumb joint gives me a problem. The thumb joint just won't go in there, no matter what I do.
And there it is. Okay, well, that's helpful to our listeners.
Yeah. So don't feel bad about yourself if you can't get that thumb joint in there. Not all of us can.
So on your podcast, you had Diablo Cody, and you said that we're going to be talking about staying enthusiastic in an industry that wants to keep terrorizing women. That was profound.
It's true, though, because, you know, we just have to keep our wits about us and keep the real reason why we're artists back to that, you know, get back to that and not let anything, you know, really like turn it, you know, like for me, it's about feeling like, you know, because there's not a lot of roles for older women in Hollywood. It gets very tough. Like you see a lot of women and they're young, they're actresses, and then they turn 35 and you don't see them again.
Right.
Maybe you'll see them again when they're like Betty White's age, but in general, you don't. And so that's can be really sort of a terrorizing thing for a woman who's an actress, who's, you know, who wants to be creative at this industry. So it's something that we, you know, we all kind of think about. I mean, fortunately, being in comedy, it helps because comedians are always wanted and we're kind of rare. So that's the one place where we're able to continue on. But for actresses, it's very tough.
And also weave into that then also the body shaming. Because I remember you were talking a lot about during the All American Girl times that they told you to lose weight.
Yes. And it was so hard. And that really took me into a place of real darkness. You know, like I didn't realize that I had to think about that because I was an actress, but I was a comedian, a comedic actress. So I didn't realize I was put up to those standards. And so it was very, very tough. Fortunately, like I kind of got away from it, like the real destructive stuff. Some people don't survive. You know, anorexia and bulimia can be very deadly diseases. And so, you know, I was lucky enough to get out of it, but it's really tough.
And what do you think helped you get out of it? Like, what would you recommend to people?
I think a sense of humor. And a sense of knowing that food is part of life, that we have to enjoy it and love it. And our bodies are really amazing. And we shouldn't be constantly like scrutinizing ourselves because of our size or shape or whatever. It's really about how we enjoy things. And, you know, enjoying being in this body has made my life so much better rather than fighting it.
Yeah. I saw, and I wish I could remember this quote, I saw a meme and it was so stunning where it said, if we could start looking at our bodies and stretch marks or roles for what gave us them, a cupcake you had on a date when you were falling in love, a mm-hmm. child that you got to bear.
Yeah.
We started looking at the beauty that they symbolize and represent mm-hmm. as opposed to fighting back on it, we can work on loving our bodies more.
Right. This house that has served us so well in life and brought us to the moment that we are here and now. It's really profound. So we have to thank our bodies so much.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, Margaret Cho, thank you for the work you're doing, because not only are you making us laugh, but you're also helping to kind of change the world.
Thank you.
So everyone knows where to find you, but for those that are living under a rock, where can they find you?
They can find me. I'm at Margaret Cho on Twitter, Margaret_Cho on Instagram. I am out there, Margaret Cho Facebook, everywhere, MargaretCho.com. I'm touring all over the world.
Fresh off the bloat.
That's right.
Go see it, Margaret Cho. Coming up next, we're going to be sliding into the DMs and then talking about important conversations to have with your fiance. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on channel Q.
All right. Margaret Cho has left the building. Bum-ba-da-bum. I didn't know her and Jay Rodriguez co-starred in Sharknado 5. I didn't know they had done that many, but that movie's amazing. I only saw the first one. It was actually amazing. I loved it. I'll have to check them out. But to see Jay Rodriguez and Margaret Cho as a married couple, come on now. That's cinematic magic. Okay. Question tonight. It's up on our Loveline IG page. Tonight's question is, what do you think is the main contributor to the declining marriage rates? Oh, yeah. We're going to unpack that. And later in the show, we'll also be talking about important conversations to have with your fiance. Things that just kind of get out of the way. There's certain topics that tend to create a lot of issues and stress. You get them out of the way, you have a solution. Also, you see those minefields coming. You know what the topics are that you have to work through. But for some, they also realize we're not compatible. We have very different ideas on relationality and future goals. So anyway, we're going to talk about what those topics are and how to navigate that. Go on to Loveline IG, weigh in on the question of the night, breaking that down. But right now, it's time to do a little slide in DMs. Slide in the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sexy world. We want you to explore it with confidence. Here we go. Hey, Dr. Chris. I frequently fake orgasms. I just want to stop the question right there and just unpack that, but we'll circle back. I am conscious of how I look when having sex and usually close my eyes, especially for kissing and intercourse. What do you recommend to be more embodied? Well, I'm thankful you know that you're not being embodied, right? Closing your eyes, focusing during sex on how you look, faking orgasms are all very disembodied, right? That means you're not present in yourself, with yourself, to what's happening. Because remember, sex is about fun and pleasure, primarily. That is why we do it. It's also there for intimacy building, self-soothing, connecting, maybe developing deeper friendships. Yes, you can have sex with your friends. But the main goal is pleasure and fun. And if sex isn't pleasurable and fun, we aren't having sex anymore. We're doing something else. We're using our bodies in a sexual way towards something else, but it's not healthy sexuality, right? So being embodied is about just being present. Does this feel good? Is this fun? What might else I want to do? Where might I want to be touched? Where would I be turned on by, you know, touching my partner, right? So faking orgasms, we have to get away from that. I want everyone to really work on saying to themselves, what positions or sex acts or scenarios turn me on and get me off? And tell yourself that's going to be the goal the next couple times you have sex, is asking for that, creating that, requesting that. Because again, we're done with mind reading. We don't want our partners to be, so, you know, they should know better. No. We are all responsible for our own orgasms. We're all responsible for how we feel. We're all responsible for asking what we're wanting, right? Always done under care and compassion, where you're, you know, aware of your partner, but we have to ask for what we need. So stop faking orgasms and say, hey, this is what I need you to do to get me off. Hey, this is what would really turn me on. We have to stop having the kind of sex that we think our partners want to have. So that's the first tip to being more embodied. Have the kind of sex you want to have. Ask for it ahead of time, during, changing your mind, whatever it is. Second, get out of your head. Sex, if you're worried about what you're saying, how you look, if what I'm doing is good for them, that's pulling you out of your body. If what you're doing doesn't feel good to them, they need to tell you. Put it responsibility on them for them to tell you, do this more, touch me here instead. That's their responsibility. You focus on you. And so if you're worried about how you look, no, not good sex. Good sex, we look horrible. Good sex, we're making strange noises. Good sex, crazy stuff is falling out of our mouths. Crazy sex, we're wet and sweaty. Crazy sex might smell. There's going to be puddles sometimes, like body fluids. Crazy sex you're letting loose. That's healthy sex. So that's the second goal, to be more embodied. Let your body do what it wants to do. It doesn't need to look good. When we're in a heightened moment of eroticism, your partner's not worried about how you look. They're just having fun and feeling good, right? They're in their body. So first step again, ask for the sex you want. Second step, stop worrying about how you look, what you're saying, how you sound. You go all in and you do you and you let loose. And the third, keep your eyes open. Seriously, even while kissing, open your damn eyes. Because what you're going to do is, it's going to be more intimacy building. It's going to heighten eroticism. You're actually going to be connecting to the person and connecting to yourself. And you add that additional layer of seeing yourself eroticized, and that can turn you on. When you see your partner looking at you turned on, that can just stoke that flame and add to it. You know what I mean? That just adds that extra element that we need. Sliding in the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sexy world. We want you to explore with confidence. Coming up next, we're going to be talking about important conversations to have with your fiance. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. 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 This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on channel Q.
Right now, we're going to talk about conversations you need to have with your fiance to possibly divorce-proof your marriage. Now, coming into my clinical practice, there's a lot of things that are brought up. And what's fascinating is how a lot of us think, erroneously, that if we're attracted enough to our partner and love them enough, committed enough, that all will be well. But there are some things that can become deal breakers or really problematically ongoing obstacles that, if talked about on the front end, can be worked out. Also can let you know what the red flags might be. Right? And you can see them coming a mile away. It's really good to know as a couple what your couple red flags are, or, you know, those really difficult conversations. And some learn we're not compatible. We have different visions, different plans, different goals. And so here are some of the things you got to be talking about. Children. For those that want children and those that desperately don't want children, that can be one of those topics that really needs to be explored. Now, I always remind people, when you meet someone, it's a starting point. We never know who will become years down the road. We never know what's just rooted in our current situation, and we're changed. So none of these should be necessarily deal breakers, but they're things to keep in mind. Now, I know things like children for some is a deal breaker. It's saying, I only want kids, I never want kids. But again, some people's decision about wanting or not wanting are rooted in their current financial situation, which could change. Also, having maybe not been in stable relationships in the past, they can't conceive of co-parenting, where this relationship might really have some longevity, and then they can down the road conceive of that, right? So they're not necessarily things that won't change, but children tends to be a really powerful one. So don't assume that you're on the same page. Talk about it. Bring it up. Children's an important one. Also, who's going to necessarily be the primary income generator, if not both? But that's something to talk about. Look, we're in a time where no one should make sexist decisions or assumptions. Don't assume that if you're female identified, that the person that's male identified is the one that's planning on working full time and going to work and quote unquote, if you have kids, not staying home. You cannot assume that. I support a lot of men in my practice that are like, I don't want to work 40 hours. If they're in a hetero relationship, my wife can do that. I want to stay home with the kids, or I want to stay home and focus on hobbies and leisure things. So we can no longer assume that a woman's going to be a housewife or should be a housewife. Men, don't assume that either, that the woman's necessarily looking, or someone's female identified, to be at home with kids or to have kids or to not work. So have that conversation. Don't assume that if you have a traditional vision based in gender roles that your partner does. Few do these days. And I think that that's really powerful. And that can undo a lot of resentment in moving forward if you understand what someone's thinking in these terms. Also, how they define family. Some people like the small nuclear family, just me and you. Or just me and you if we have kids. Other people, it's more community-based. Their mom, their grandma, they want them always around. They might want to have them move in and live with you. They want to have them at all the holidays and events. Got to talk about that kind of stuff. Not everyone is comfortable with a large family unit. Not everyone's comfortable with a small family unit, right? I know I come from a smaller family unit, and I've dated some people that have these gigantic families, and it was very overwhelming at first, really beautiful, and I welcomed it. I seek it now, but it can be a little overwhelming and unexpected. And if you're going to get married, you got to talk about those things. Also, how we're going to handle money. Money is a major stress that can happen in relationships. And what I mean about handling money, I mean a lot of different things based on it. First off, some people are spenders, some people are savers. Talking about that. Talking about, you want to share bank accounts. You want to always have your own separate bank accounts. What do you see as necessary spending? What do you see as unnecessary spending? Right? You want to kind of iron those things out. And also, there's a lot of power associated with the person who generates the most amount of income. So also know that and dissect that. What expectations will you have on me because you earn more or because you're working and I'm not, right? What might that look like? What might expectations might you have when you come home if I'm at home and I'm not working or not working as often as you are, as much as you are? Those are things to really iron out. Also, just general roles and responsibilities. Again, thankfully, we're not assuming based on someone's gender presentation that they are going to work or staying home, raising the kids or cleaning or whatever it is. You gotta really divvy that out. I mean, these are things you should talk about just before you move in with someone. There's no expectations anymore based on gender. And again, that's a really stunning thing, but some people still have that normative traditional vision and make a lot of assumptions that whoever's more masculine is going to be out of the house working, generating more of the income. Can't make those assumptions anymore. Other ones that are really, really important, and me and Rebecca Ishida, who's with us every Thursday doing couples therapy, we were talking last week about the idea of bodies changing and weight gain. And we were saying how that might be a conversation that needs to be had, because as we age, as we give birth, as we are ill, as we're on medications, a multitude of things, our bodies change. And the body we have when you meet us, we cannot promise that, nor should we have to. So how do you want to deal as a couple with someone's body changing? Do you want to make that something that we talk about and you can let me know if my body's changing ways that aren't erotic to you, or do not? I've shared personally, I do not want to hear that from my partner. I'm not interested in your thoughts on my body. It will be body shaming. It'll be traumatic. I struggle with my own body dysmorphia in my own ways. I don't need that brought in. And if you're struggling, you have to go work on your inability to have flexibility in the kind of body types that are erotic to you, right? So I do have that conversation. You might want to bring that up. Also, monogamy. Are we monogamous? What does monogamy mean to you? There's so many couples I work with where they've never talked about, we've decided we're monogamous, but we haven't talked about what that means. We haven't talked about what falls outside of that, what might be a gray area. And that's important because some people might say, I still want the right to sext or flirt. You have to decide for you what your definition is. There's no right definition. You both have to agree on it. And so it's something you have to find a landing place that you both can really subscribe to. We're also living in a time where it's not always balanced. One person might want monogamy, the other person might want something more open. And so the one who only wants monogamy stays monogamous while the other doesn't. Like, that's a possibility for some. And finally, you got to talk about how much time you expect together versus solo. Some people like a lot of autonomous time, solo time. And you don't want to personalize that. You want to understand what they might need. They might not want to see you every night. They might want some weekends away. And other people, if you want a lot of togetherness, share that. That I expect to see you every night. I expect to always be with you. There we go. Coming up next, question of the night. You're listening to Love Line with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Love Line. This is Love Line with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
Okay, here we go. A little question of the night time. Oh, make me do a little acoustic acapella. All right, tonight's question of the night is the main contributor of declining marriage rates. Why? Tell me why. I've got my own theories, but I want to hear what y'all came up with because y'all are a smart bunch. Here we go. Someone said kids listening to the media. I'm not mad at that. And parents not instilling core values in their life. Huh. I need to hear more because I'm getting nervous. I hear traditional family values in there and I start panicking. I start sweating. Someone else said selfishness. Now, I'm not going to argue with that one. We need more care and compassion in general in terms of everything. And I agree with you. Too much narcissism and selfishness. That's definitely not helping marriage rates. Someone else said more diverse relational styles options. I 100% agree with that as well. In my newest book, Rebel Love, there's an entire chapter on that about how we have to allow more diversity. Monogamy doesn't work for everyone. Monogamy works for some people. Marriage doesn't work for everyone. Some people just want to live together, have a symbolic marriage. I mean, we have to be more willing to accommodate what people need, right? And you also said poverty. Yeah, that's real too. Someone else said in terms of contributing factors for declining marriage rates, people understanding the government doesn't need to be involved in your commitment. See, that's my reasoning too. I don't plan on getting married. I'm all about, I was engaged. I'm all about commitment. I'm all about symbolic marriage, but I don't need the government regulating my relationship, telling me who I can be with, when I can be with them. And I also think it's okay to be able to leave when I need to leave. I agree that there's some classism in divorce, of how expensive it is, how difficult it is. People, when they're ready and need to leave a relationship should be able to leave. It shouldn't be as difficult and it should not be expensive. Someone else said lack of intimacy as to why marriage rates declining. People put it on the back burner. They need to have dates and reconnect. 100% agree with that as well. A lot of relationships lack true intimacy. People also stop dating. I agree with that as well. They forget that this is my romantic partner and I still need to romanticize them and sexualize them, and they turn into roommates, which is fine for some people, but a lot of the people don't want that. Remember, it's not your best friend. It's your romantic sexual partner. Keep it romantic. Keep it sexual every day from the door. It's winning scenario. Someone else said money. I agree with that. But I agree with that in that people are overworking. They're over-prioritizing productivity. They're not giving enough time to their family and their relationship. And it's sucking them dry. It's creating stress. That's part of that. Someone else said toxic monogamy. And I'm getting old. Enjoy like YOLO, divorce and weddings. So it's the whole you only live once and toxic monogamy. That's right. The way we're running our monogamy is toxic. Not that monogamy is wrong or bad. It's great. But the way we're doing it, we think it's about ownership. And we do it in a way where we see everyone as a threat. And everything's about trying to mediate these threats and to control our partner and to never be uncomfortable. And it's okay to be uncomfortable. Everyone isn't a threat. If you're in a relationship that you trust them, we don't have to worry about those things. And when trust is broken, we regroup. And we talk about why it was broken, what we can do to strengthen our relationship and what we can do to make sure that doesn't happen. And we talk about what was that a symptom of? What do we need to work on? Someone else said as to why marriage rates are declining. I think young age plays a role. Your brain's still developing and you're still growing as a person. Yeah, don't get married young. I think youth and adolescence should be having a lot of sexuality, a lot of different dating partners, learning who you are and what you want. Worry about marriage, if at all, in your 30s and 40s. But I think everyone in their 20s, that's a time for exploration. Someone else said communication. Agreed. Someone else said women focusing more on their careers, 100%. Women are no longer feeling not successful if they're not married or partnered. Women are realizing that they can delay children and marriage and relationship if that's even something they want. They're also realizing that developing and working on things that are important to them, which is possibly career, is meaningful. Someone else said nobody wants to commit anymore. Always next best thing with a swipe. Yeah, that's in there. We definitely have the tyranny of too many options. You don't have to take anything seriously or really work at it because there's 15 more down the road or sitting in my inbox. Some people said focusing more on their career and other personal goals. I love that. I think that that's a good thing that they're doing that. But yes, that can have a negative impact on marriage for sure. Not necessarily that that's a bad thing, right? People can still be in relationships. You don't have to bring in the government and get married necessarily, right? Someone else said marriage not being a woman's only option for a vowed future. Amen. Someone said the decline in marriage rates is due to desire for financial independence and student loan debt. Ain't that true? So much student loan debt. Don't have money to do anything. Someone else said miscommunication and lack of conflict resolution. Isn't that true, though? We really don't have good skills with conflict resolution. A lot of people are also just afraid of conflict. Got to hang in there and work through that. Someone said, I think it's the overall relaxation among folks. That's an archaic institution. Women and femmes simply have more opportunities with regard to education and work more so than 50 years ago. Women are also outnumbering men in college, becoming educated, having careers, all while realizing that marriage isn't a necessity the way it used to be. Along with this, younger generations are beginning to realize that, that's cut off. But you kind of just nailed it all right there. I mean, talk about a very comprehensive answer. I agree with that. Thank you to all that participated. Coming up next, sliding back in those DMs. Listening to Love Line with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Love Line. This is Love Line with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
Hey, you want to go to Vegas? You want to be a part of the Life is Beautiful Music and Arts Festival? Well, we got your back. Channel Q has a summer party for you, and it's in Vegas. All you got to do is head over to wearechannelq.com to register to win. We're giving away 5 trips to Vegas for the Life is Beautiful Music and Arts Festival and access to the Life is Beautiful pool party. We're going to put you up at the Planet Hollywood Hotel and Casino for the weekend. You get 2 3-day passes, and there's some really awesome performances. We got Billie Eilish, Post Malone, Janelle Monáe, Rufus Del Sol, Shaloo, Carly Rae Jepsen, King Princess, and Griffin. So head over to wearechannelq.com to register to win. It's that easy. That's a great lineup. I'm not mad at that one. And just so you know, it's September 20, 21, and 22. Cool. Wearechannelq.com. Always trying to hook you up. We always got your back. But right now, it's time to slide into the DMs. Slide in the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms. Because it's a big old sexy world, and we want you to explore with confidence. All right. Dear Dr. Chris, what do you think someone should do if they're married or dating an addict? Should they stick by them through the relapses and trying to get sober, or focus on their own mental health and leave? And what if they're scared to leave simply because it might cause them to use more and spiral downward? And how many chances should you give an addict before you have to let them go? So many questions in there. Well, we now know that we used to say, let them hit rock bottom. They need to rock bottom. Codependence, if you help them out. We now realize it's the opposite. You know, addiction is about disconnection, and sobriety is about relationality, and that people need people by them, and that if you do isolate them, it's possibly going to get worse. And by staying with them, it can help them be better. They have someone in their life that's a positive influence, someone to reflect back that they have worth and value, and that's actually going to be more motivating to get sober. Not everyone has to hit rock bottom. I do like how you're throwing in there, though, about your own mental health. You got to really check in on that. We kind of sling that around. It might be hard to watch them struggle. It might be annoying, but just make sure when you say it's impacting mental health that it actually is. And if it is, you have a right to set a boundary. But if it's not, hang in there with them. Yeah, they need you to be the anchor for them. Might be the most powerful thing you do for yourself and for them and the relationship, right? Because people do get sober and they do stay sober. So if it's not definitely impacting your mental health, hang in there if it's just annoying or struggle or difficult. But if it's negatively impacting you, set a boundary. And the boundary might be leaving, or it might be you cannot be here while high. And if you're high, I have to leave, or you have to leave. And I tell people that even with like holidays. Hey, I'm coming home. I'm sober. If you're going to be drunk, I'm going to leave. So please let me know if you're going to drink or use, and I'll stay home. You know, or if you're traveling, get a hotel room so you can leave. You know, we have to set boundaries around, you know, what we're willing to have around us. Right? But yeah, I think you stick around as long as you can. And yes, it is possible that if you leave, they will downroll, they will spiral downward. That's often what does happen. So I'm a fan of sticking in as much as you can, setting some boundaries, but still being as available as you can. You might not live with them anymore. You might not be dating them anymore, but it's okay to say, reach out when needed, or days that you're sober, I'll see you and we'll do something healthy, or I'll take you to a meeting. Or whatever it is, you know, be present in the ways you can. You don't necessarily have to make it black and white, where I'm all in or all out. Some people put their marriage or their relationship on pause, you know, while you're working through this, let's pause all that. Let's just be supportive people. Let's not worry about all the relational marital stuff, right? So there's that. Sliding the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms. It's a big old sexy world. I want you to explore the confidence. Tomorrow night, we got OBB. They're going to be in the studio. They're also going to be playing live acoustic. So check in that. And also our 60 Seconds game that we play with Margaret Cho is going to be on IG. So check it out now on the Loveline IG page. That's our show. As always, thanks for hanging out with me. Back tomorrow. Have an awesome, awesome night.
Loveline. 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 This is Loveline with Dr. Chris.
On Channel Q.